Welcome to SourceCast, episode number 8. I'm Joey Lombardi. I'm just going to come out and say it. IBM completely dominated the news this week. Our other suppliers, there's literally nothing to talk about. So we're going to cover IBM, we're going to cover some of the moves they've made in the last year, and then we're going to shift over and talk about some general career information that we've been covering on the other side of the blog. So with that, let's get started. So IBM's big news this week was that they acquired a company called ClearLeap. ClearLeap is a video platform that enables massive scalability of videos, and it helps clients ramp up and support millions of concurrent users within seconds to support special events. They have companies like HBO, A&E, NFL, BBC, and Sony that are customers. The news itself, not major, but this is the 12th acquisition that IBM made this year. Let's review them. I'm going to go chronologically, starting from the beginning of the year, and we're working our way back. Alchemy API, Explorus and Fitel, which are feeders for Watson Medical, Blue Box Group, Compose Inc., Meteorix, Strongloop, CleverSafe, Merge Healthcare Incorporated, Gravitant, and now ClearLeap. And let's not forget the Weather Company. So that's 12 in 1 year. Not to beat a dead horse, but Seeking Alpha, kind of wrong, said they weren't going to do a lot of acquisitions this year. So what does this mean? These are not random purchases. There's a clear purpose. Every single one of these companies help bolster and improve their cloud services or their analytics function. ClearLeap adds another dimension for multimedia, which we haven't seen much in IBM's cloud services. But for companies that want scalability, they want to reach out to a customer base, video is a clear option. And it's something that companies still struggle with. If you don't want to put a video on YouTube and have the scalability of Google behind your back, it's still somewhat difficult to put a video out on the internet for a private firm. This makes a lot of sense, actually. It's a component that you need if you're going to export your services to a cloud function and you're not Google. Speaking of IBM's health services, they just created another partnership with Novo Nordisk for Watson Health, creating a sort of virtual doctor experiment to help people with diabetes. The virtual doctor uses a broad range of health data to generate precise treatments and advice for people with diabetes. Things like insulin dosages, calculations, glucose monitoring, and eventually things like food intake. I think the ultimate goal is to actually have a device to help administer and monitor insulin levels, and for that to be done automatically based on all the data points. But not all news is good news. IBM was embroiled in some social media backlash this week due to a hairdryer. You heard me right. For the last 7 months, IBM has had an initiative to improve the participation of women in science. They've had a series of speakers and videos, but the most recent initiative for getting women into science encouraged them to hack a hairdryer. Many female scientists argued that by playing up the gender stereotypes of women caring more about their looks, the campaign has lost sight on the gender stereotype it was trying to lambast. The whole campaign's been shut down now. For whatever good the criticism has done to bring light of some potential stereotyping or gender insensitivity, you had something that was ultimately good that was promoting the sciences, and now it's gone. For those of you who are still watching South Park, this season the show has tackled the concept of safe spaces and being PC, and I feel like this particular project falls into that. I think there were good intentions. It was clearly improperly executed. But I think that the criticism was overly harsh and shut down something that was ultimately designed to be positive and helpful. And there is a podcast that I'm working on right now on John Ronson's book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed. That'll be coming out in a few weeks, probably around Christmas. And that'll be a panel discussion as well. So it's about social media, being shamed on Twitter and Facebook, and talks about how to recover and how to act when it's happening. Speaking of being social, one of the new office trends is doing office karaoke, like actual karaoke in the office, not going and asking a bunch of people to go to a karaoke bar after work. They're talking about actually having karaoke sessions in the office, which sounds like an absolute nightmare. The thinking is that it presents people in leadership and people who may have strong personalities in a lens of vulnerability, which will make them more accessible and open to communication. I can see the point, but I don't think I want to see any of my management singing old Donna Summers tunes or that Pina Colada song. That would just be weird. But I understand. I understand why people are thinking about making office environments more interesting or more personable. There's benefit to having everyone in the office together, or at least for small periods of time, to synergize. I know people hate that word. And for companies that aren't in the news constantly, that aren't the cool places to work, it's probably hard to get top talent or to compete with companies like Google or all of the companies in Silicon Valley. So yeah, you want to try interesting things, things that are easy to implement, things that create a more open and comfortable culture for new talent. But an article from Entrepreneur.com mentions another thing that companies can do to compete. Part of the culture that attracts newer people is the startup culture. And that startup culture means that you have a constant loop of immediate feedback and the ability to scale ideas very quickly. The continuous feedback loop is what actually draws people to startups in the first place. And it's a lot of work, typically, that's part of the stereotype, but it's that constant loop of being able to quickly develop something and then get it out the door is appealing to a lot of people. I find it appealing. So something that more established companies could do, per the suggestion of this Entrepreneur.com article, is potentially reducing some of the bureaucracy, the paperwork, and the need to justify budgets. Those are a lot of the things that are being identified as very uninteresting for younger talents, and it's a built-in advantage for startups that somehow manage to bypass all that because they don't have that process. They're more streamlined, or it's potentially the opposite of that. They just don't have that robustness. I think any time that you can reduce bureaucracy or the amount of paperwork, that's not a startup thing. That's good company practice. That's good process. That's Six Sigma practices. Reduce bottlenecks. That reduces your ability to create defects in the environment. Speaking of bureaucracy, an article from Procurement Insights stated that 50% of all procurement professionals would choose a different career. That does not sound right to me, and I think it's an alarming headline. For those of you that are in the procurement field, or work with those of us in the procurement field, the article basically says that in the past, the procurement or sourcing divisions of companies, people sort of just fell into those departments. They hadn't actively selected them as a career path. And that those people are the ones that are effectively stating that they would do something else if they could, because they sort of fell into procurement. However, procurement and strategic sourcing is becoming a hot subject at campuses and colleges, and there's a whole new crop of students that are looking to come in and take these jobs. The challenges for procurement organizations and strategic sourcing organizations is to identify the people that may potentially want to find new career opportunities and either engage them and make them feel good about the jobs that they have and the work that they're doing, or start to phase them out and bring in the people who are excited potentially about the job. But that goes back to what I was talking about earlier, competing with the Googles of the world. How do you attract them? How do you make the job interesting to people who may have a lot of opportunities? It doesn't matter if you're new to your career or you've been in it for a while. Having the ability to eliminate defects in your job, issues that have been nagging for a while, bottlenecks, that's something that anybody who cares about their job can do. But that feedback loop needs to exist. And I think that improves engagement and creates a culture that people want to work in, whether you're Google or not. For as cool as Google is, and they are cool, they're smart. They want their people on campus for a long time. So sure, they'll do your laundry, they'll feed you. But the reality of the situation is they want you in that office and they want you working as much as possible. It's the same situation with at Netflix, with Reed Hastings. If you're not exactly what they need at the moment, you're out the door, even if you're a founder and even if you're somebody that built the company. And speaking of work-life balance, I'm going to end it here so I can actually edit this episode before my son wakes up from his nap. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Take care. Outside there's a boxcar waiting. Outside the family store. Outside the fire breathing. Outside we wait till the face turns blue. I know the nervous walking.